There's an interview with Dr. Harley Jolly on November 10th, 1996. And I'm going to start, Dr. Jolly, with just a few very basic questions. When exactly is your birthday?
Well, according to your calendar there, today is the 12th. So my birthday was last year then.
Happy birthday. That's great.
No, my birthday was July the 5th.
Oh, okay.
July the 5th. I was kidding you. July the 5th, 1920.
Okay, wow. Well, where were you born at?
I was born in Caldwell County.
Oh.
You know, the foot of the Blue Ridge there.
I know exactly where Caldwell County is.
Yes,
so you've always stayed right in this area. You've seen it change.
Well, I had repeated chances to leave. I'd weigh those chances and turned them down. I haven't regretted one bit.
That's great.
Not one bit.
What exactly has been your connection with the Parkway? I know that you have always been labeled as park historian. Tell me.
In 1958, I read religiously. In 1958, reading a news magazine, U.S. News World Report, there's a section in there, still there by the way, it says, news you can use.
Mm-hmm.
And in there was just a little squib. The U.S. Park Service is looking for historians.
Huh.
I responded to that. And I wound up on the Blue Ridge Parkway. So 1958 was my first seasonal training, my first introduction to the National Park Service, first introduction to the whole Parkway system as such, and all those nice uniformed boys.
Oh, well, how did they go about training you?
We had about a week, believe it or not, about a week of training, including an entire trip along the Parkway, bus load of us, plus.
We did that my first year.
Oh,
that was the only time that
great,
we did that.
A great way
recent
to go.
Times.
A great
I agree.
Because there's where you're building fellowship. It isn't so much the training, as you all know. It's the fellowship, it's the learning. And some of the fellows who were sound asleep probably learned as much as the rest of us did because they were listening from another viewpoint.
Osmosis.
Yes. But that's my beginning, and that's 1958.
Okay. And did you work as a seasonal ranger, as a historian?
I was assigned as a seasonal ranger at Humpback Rocks,
okay.
Which you know well.
Yes, sure do.
Humpback Rocks in 1958 was my introduction, Milepost 5.8, and the cultural story of the mountain peak.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me a chance to go out from, on my days off, I would go into the county seat there, the county of Augusta, and research all their deeds and all their stories about that Humpback Rocks site.
Hmm.
That was interesting.
And did you continue to do this year after year?
From 1958, basically each season. I had previously been teaching in summer school. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed this much better because of a better change of pace.
Right.
So yes, for a year and year after there,
okay.
Continued to do that.
Did you
assigned all along the Parkway, okay. From one end of the Parkway to the other.
Well, what was the Parkway like in 1956?
The Parkway was like a snake been cut into pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Sections still wiggling.
Right.
Sections that never wiggle again, it looked like indeed. And that's a very disconnected piece. And yet, you remember old Ben Franklin's snake, don't step on me.
That's right.
This snake
tread
was in process of coming along there. And don't tread on me became a reality. And you remember the dedication in 1957, 1987,
mm-hmm.
That final little
that
last link, and the
threading
could be done all along the way then.
Huh.
Yep.
Yep, that's great. Were you able to interact with the local people as you were doing your research, or was it strictly going in and looking at deeds?
It'll never be that kind of work for me. I'm a people's person.
Right.
And one of our absolute points, who are our neighbors? Who are the people who come in here? How can we best serve these people? They are our visitors. How can we best interpret this region for them?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, research the deeds so I can be able to tell the district.
Right.
Sure.
Do you have any interesting stories about encounters with people or?
Well, just one example. In researching the deed there on the Humpback Rock, talking about the never failing spring. Well, as long as I was there, the spring never failed.
Mm-hmm.
I went back last summer, I think it was, and there's no water.
Mm-hmm.
Spring has failed.
Mm-hmm.
So, names change, times change, climate changes, and yet the Parkway goes on. And regardless, each time it's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
Different story. So the next person who comes along can talk about the never failing spring that did fail.
Right, yeah,
sure.
So that would be part of it.
Sure.
What are the biggest changes you have seen on the Parkway, though?
The biggest change are these fellows who wear guns.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, when I came aboard, I would go on patrol with the Ranger boys. And their guns would be under the seat, hidden. Now, as you well know, it's so horridly, well, just it's obvious that these are patrolmen, not Rangers, in that sense of the word. I know the reason, I can appreciate the reason for it, but I do regret that society has made such a thing. You're well aware, mm-hmm. well aware of the difference. And with that came a difference in attitude, of course.
I know you got to know a lot of the big wigs. Sam Weems, tell me a little bit about him.
Well, a lot of people were afraid of Sam, but Sam's door was always open. I never went to his office, but what he would smile and ask me to come in. I never asked him a question, but what he answered that question to the best of knowledge, or pointed me in the direction I could. I came aboard young and green, not realizing all the stories and legends behind Mr. Williams. So it didn't bother me, but it did please me that I was able to meet that kind of person and enjoy working with that kind of person. But again, that's what made the Park Service what it was, and still does.
Right. So you were 36 when you began doing this?
I was 58 off of 20, it was 38, yeah.
Okay. You had been teaching college at Morris Hill until?
Oh yes, I had been teaching college since 1958. Okay. I mean since 1949, right?
Okay.
So in 49 I came here as a freshman teacher, fresh out of the University of Tennessee, into the classroom, and would teach summer school in addition to the regular term. But I was looking for something to give me a change of pace. And I think one of the finest everything ever happened to me was the opportunity to work for the Park Service. It was a whole new world of friends, a whole new dimension of interpretation. You and I go through the training portion, and yet each time we something different, and always there's the growth. And always, hey, I missed that the other time around. This sort of thing. Right? And I think it may be a better teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I think also having been a classroom teacher helped me become a better interpreter.
Right.
So they were all well met there.
Right. Well, the one thing I like about the Parkway is you can learn what you want to learn and you teach it immediately to a group of people that want to learn
right back.
It too.
Right back.
You I love that.
You betcha.
I love it.
And that's the thing I miss. I don't miss creating the papers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't miss all the preparation it takes. What I do miss is the campfire program. Mm-hmm. What I do miss is the classroom, which I can see the eyes light up in classes. Those are the interpretations that make life really enjoyable. And that's what the Parkway is about, I think, the interpretation.
Did you give a lot of campfire programs?
Oh, gosh, yes.
What were your topics?
Anything and everything we could think of that was relevant.
Right.
I think the first thing I did was up at probably Rocky Knob. Talking about tree roots of all things, on how that related to the climate. So, and then finally, winding up doing all sorts of programs about the mountain man, the mountain people, and probably just as important, I would recruit persons in the community, persons with talents and gifts and things of this sort. For example, bring square dancers into Cupshe Meadows there in the evening, give the evening program, and then move up to the patio and do the square dancing.
That's great.
Almost never go home.
That's wonderful.
Folk musicians up on the patio of the old lodge there at Pisgah, Mount Pisgah,
mm-hmm.
out there on the deck, really.
Mm.
And here you are looking out to the Great Valley, and there's the big moon, and here's this beautiful person with that great, 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 marvelous touch of the mountain music.
Mm.
Those people didn't want to go home at all.
That's nice.
Oh.
That's great. We have volunteers down in Linville Falls that will bring their music, and you'll have the whole campground around
right,
their
right.
Host campsite, and it's just amazing the camaraderie that happens.
It's there, but it's your region. I bring in potters, Bee Hensley and Mike, up there on the Parkway now.
I'm interviewing them in a couple of weeks.
With their anvil and all that there on Crabtree, there in the amphitheater. Now you talk about a show. Oh. Then bring in folk who made baskets, whatever was local crafts.
Right.
And yet, this is interpreting the region.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me late at getting back home.
Right.
I didn't mind. You understand that.
I understand that. I've been there too myself. But speaking of B. Hensley, I'm going to be interviewing him and his son who worked on the parkway. And there's another fellow named Ira Thompson and his son. And Woody from Woody's Chair Shop. I know B. Hensley worked at the Conscientious Objector Camp on down at Buck Creek Gap.
Yeah, you know where it was.
Tell me a little bit about that. That's one thing that I was hoping to get from you, a little bit of information that you have found about the Conscientious Objector camps.
Okay. Please keep in mind now that the Conscientious Objectors are not new.
Right.
Go back to the Old Testament and you'll find them, as you well know.
Right.
It's an ancient thing.
Mm-hmm.
Protests are not, in Vietnam, they didn't begin, they don't.
Right.
But on our parkway, we've been blessed by their labors more than most people ever know.
Mm-hmm.
I have never heard a campfire program about them. They were scattered all over. Smokies had them, we had them. But basically, first of all, when the parkway was devised and designed, it was designed as a make work program, as you well know, to put people to work for 500 miles along the Blue Ridge Country.
Right.
Okay? And with that, the adult laborers were the WPA persons.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed at home, commuted to and from the job. The young people who came aboard were Civilian Conservation Corps boys who had camps all along the parkway, and
right.
You're familiar with some of those. And then, as World War II came, I was in the offing, the WPA program will be phased out because there'll be lots of jobs for those fellows. The CCC boys, by and large, would be drafted or be volunteered to go off to war, went to the ends of the earth, and to have somebody for security, somebody who could somewhat at least act as babysitter for the parkway during the war, the Conscientious Objectors were signed. They were volunteers. They were given an opportunity. Okay, choose what job you want, something that suits you. And a number of them from all over this nation decided they'd like to work for the parkway. We had a camp that Mr. Hensley will tell you about called Buck Creek Camp, CCC camp. When the CCC boys abandoned it, these fellows moved in, set up their own shop. Very democratic, very, very much. Some of the most highfalutin debates about any topic you can think of would go on. But they also for example, one of the things that they did, and I knew nothing about it at the time, they did much of the work at Crabtree Meadows. There, what was used to be the old picnic area,
right.
Then converted to campground.
Right.
Yeah. We would go down hike in Crabtree and find huge piles of logs. We find cables and so forth. We were told all sorts of stories about how it got there.
Mm-hmm.
And little did I know. But later on, when I began interviewing the Conscientious Objectors, I said, yes, we were cutting down those old dead chestnuts, and that's what they were.
Mm-hmm.
See? So that's the dimension. But you find pictures of them and a number of pictures showing them on fire alert, out fighting fire. You'll find them using the graders and so forth to build the road from the service station up around the campground there.
Mm-hmm.
It all this was done by them. An enormous amount of, how shall I say it, I think babysitting is a word for it. It's better than that, it's more than that. Because they were maintaining the security of the parkway while the war was going on. And they were doing positive work as well. So that is in their favor. Now, our fellows will leave from Buck Creek and will go to the Great Smokies, to the park headquarters over there for quite a while and work. And then I think that same group will wind up being transferred out to Idaho.
Huh.
But when you talk to Mr. Van Oy, if you can get him to tell him some of the personal stories, it is a very awesome story. For example, some of these Conscientious Objectors would volunteer to allow, to put their naked arm out and let mosquitoes bite them to find out what would be necessary to protect against mosquito bite, how to then counter malaria, all these items.
Mm-hmm.
Others drink enormous amounts of salt water to see how much salt water they could intake, trying to help our boys who were down at sea,
mm-hmm.
or our boys who were out in the South Pacific.
Right.
All sorts of these stories are what these Conscientious Objectors did.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't carry a rifle, but they sure carried an enormous amount of service.
Right.
So you get that dimension.
Right.
But the big thing for us, in the parkway, number one, they maintain the security of the parkway from fire and all that territory, continue some construction, basically, and the two beneficiaries, by and large, were at Crabtree Meadows and Peaks of Otter. There's a camp at Peaks of Otter, right down the foot of the hill down there. And those were the two large ones we know about.
And there were two other smaller ones, I believe.
Just Peace Meals.
And there was another camp, a Civilian Conservation Corps camp for African Americans right outside of Fisher's Peak. Do you know much about that camp?
all I know is very little is known about them. I couldn't find anything in the Bay State papers about them. I did find out that one of the first things they did when they moved in, have you been to the site out there?
No, I haven't been to the site.
It's a beautiful site, right there on the parkway proper. But I understood one of the first things that happened after they moved in, a huge snow isolated them.
Huh.
And the local people came in and helped.
Well, good.
So that was a good report.
That is good.
Then I have found nothing as to where the boys went.
Right.
That after just
this is all that I have on it is a camp inspection report.
Sure.
And that's as far as I can go.
Sure.
And a lot of people had never even heard that it was
right.
there,
it
but
was
I know
there.
It was there.
It was there.
But I can't find much. We can't find anybody that was at the camp,
nope.
So we figured that they probably went back to wherever they came from, since probably they weren't. It wasn't a good place for them to settle, is what we're thinking.
Now, in the National Archives, there are records that show, for example, I have records for North Carolina
right.
listing every camp. Records for Virginia in National Archives will list that camp by number of people in it, how it was staffed, whether or not it had a colonel or whatever, usually a lieutenant or a captain in there, usually a dentist or a surgeon, and then the number of people who were there, when they arrived, when they left, all that will be in that report.
Okay.
So National Archives will have that for you.
Okay, go into there.
The state of Virginia. North Carolina did hers in North Carolina Archives. It's done by county, alphabetically.
Okay.
Let's say, for example, if it's Jolly from Caldwell County, look on a Caldwell County, there'll be Jolly.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Peaks of Otter up there, what's that, Bedford? Look in Bedford County, and there'll be the listing piece from that. So if you have that much of these, you can start from.
Okay.
But it does take research time,
right.
as
that's
you
what
well
it sounds
know.
Like. Yeah,
yes.
It does. But that's the one weak point that we have with the CCC camps.
Well, see, the average person has no awareness that we ever had a black camp.
Mm-hmm. And I also read that there was one of the jewels on the string, I believe it was called Pine something, that was supposed to be a picnic
Pines,
area.
Pinesboro,
that's
sure.
it. It was supposed to be a picnic area for black people as
oh,
we
yes.
had segregation.
Oh, yes.
there.
Oh, yes.
But it never happened, I
See,
guess.
If you go back and remember, you got to go back and put it in time.
Right.
In those days, segregation was not likely to happen. So in planning for recreation for all the people, sure, this would be set aside, Pine Spur set aside, for example, and beautiful, beautiful place, very beautiful place. And that was set aside for a long time, but it was not used. And you're well aware also. Kathleen, we'll move out here already. You'll come out for a while?
How long will it take for you to get through?
About 10 minutes.
10?
What are you up to? Okay, won't take long.
Well,
I told you you'd be out by 3:00, so we were working. Okay. But the business of segregation, amazing. But the amazing thing was that they were accommodated.
Right, well,
they
I was
were,
surprised at
yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
I read that the other night in the Blue Ridge Parkway Cultural Report,
sure,
I believe.
Sure.
And I was very surprised.
But
was the picnic tables actually built and it was set aside for them, or did it not get
it was,
to that point?
It was one of those construction sites set aside. Later on, it was developed. And still with the concept that this is the umbrella for the blacks.
Okay.
But do not, now, you well know that even now on the parkway, as modest as we are and as diverse as we are, there aren't many blacks up there, no matter which end of the parkway or where you are on the parkway. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I see more and more that African Americans coming now, even in the campground,
well, of
which
course,
is surprising
course,
me, but there is a very big
very
difference.
Few.
Right?
Oh, yes,
yeah.
and they're so very few.
Yeah.
But that's a cultural viewpoint.
Do you remember, did you spend any time at Moses Cone or Julian Price?
Only as a supervisor. By the time I got to that point, I'll only come in to supervise the evening programs, things of this sort.
Okay, say that again, you supervised?
At one time I got up far enough in the hierarchy to be supervisor for seasonal programs, that sort of thing. But you're welcome.
Right. And you just moved along the parkway and you weren't in any one place?
Sure, from Dauphin Park. One night, maybe the next night might be up at who knows where.
So similar to Phil Novel's position now, I guess.
Sure.
That's interesting.
Except I was a seasonal, Phil was permanent, yeah.
Right. Tell me the best experience that you had while working with the parkway.
This one, you're not going to believe. Back when Lyndon Johnson was president, the Park Service was a beautiful place, of course. Lady Bird was very conscious of the view here, and she wanted to come up to the parkway. So one evening, she was scheduled for the Pisgah Inn. And it fell my lot to be the person to provide the program for her. So we had that tiny little portion there, the old Pisgah Inn, and I had tried to do my homework and give her a nice program. Had a slide program on "These Are Our Lives, Our Mountain People," and everything was going along just beautifully. All of a sudden, the lights went out. But you don't see very few people knew who was in the building. Very few people was aware that the First Lady was in there with them.
Right.
I'm sure FBI all over the place. But the lights went off. And instead of yelling and complaining, I just simply continued with the program with oral instead of the visual.
Okay.
And wasn't long the lights came back on and we survived in that fashion. But that was an experience.
Yes, you didn't miss a beat.
And she, you know, she was very complimentary.
Well, that's
and
good.
It was quite an experience to be able to serve the First Lady.
Well, that's
and in the dark.
So where was the president?
Yeah, where was the president? He was probably somewhere else. Yes, indeed. But that, you know, not all uncommon for her to be coming along in that fashion. If you want to, we can move to another site.
Okay, now we're continuing.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
We're going from the tropics to the frigid polar.
That's right. And from Edward Johnson to probably the worst experience on the parkway. Do you have anything that's kind of strange that happened to you?
I don't. Other than just getting on the ground, doing hikes down into the Crabtree Meadows Falls, I don't remember anything major adverse there.
Okay, yeah, I've done that, and I've almost had to carry people out with heat stroke there, too. It's a hard trail.
It's a strenuous trail, but enjoyable.
Right, it's a beautiful trail, if you can make it.
If you can stand it, if you go about 1 o'clock, you're guaranteed to get wet.
That's right. Wow. Let's see. Can you think of anything interesting that, any interesting events that happened on the parkway that struck your fancy, something you saw that you know was very spectacular?
Well, I the thing I would like to have been present for was that first shovel of dirt.
Oh, yeah.
1935, I'd like to have seen that. And then to have gone from that to that final little link of that Lynn Cove. You know,
right.
I was there, as you remember, you were there for that final dedication,
right,
which was most impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're thinking, it's people who have made that parkway.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people like Nello Tier, whose son you'll be interviewing. It was people like Joe Troitino.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry we didn't get any interview, you see.
Right.
People of that caliber.
Actually, I saw that there had been an interview done of him before. Maybe even you did it. I don't know. That would have been something interesting. If you had anything in your mind that you could think of that you would like to have recorded, is there anything there that you wish that I would ask you about?
I really wish, and you're not going to believe this, I never got to interview Stan Abbott. Never met the man.
Now, he's the one person I really wish that I could interview,
absolutely,
too. Ed Abdul was as close as I
can. As close as you could get.
That's right. And you could tell everybody that I've talked to that knew him personally, Ted Pease, him, Bill Hooper, I mean, they all just hold him in complete reverence.
They
use the word genius.
High esteem, yes.
And, you know, they, you know, can say he was a nice person, a wonderful person. He had the insight, he had the vision, but I really would love to just feel that for myself and see what it was that made him special.
Absolutely.
Because it's hard to...
Now, his Carlton, you've met Carlton, I think, has a great deal of his talent. But in reading all the reports and everything I could find about him, I was impressed by the diverse reading he had done. Almost a Latin scholar.
Mm-hmm.
Not just an architect,
right,
but a scholar. A Renaissance man, I think.
Right, definitely. I've heard that described. I mean, he knew literature, he knew poetry, he was a poet in everything he described. And he could look at a piece of land and just see it as a piece of art to be sculpted.
And
it amazes me.
Make his museum, as he called it, the Israel Life Museum. Mm-hmm. So that was my one great lack on the Parkway, was to have met and to interview him. I can't cry, though. I read his works and that sort of thing, and his son has helped in this fashion.
Okay, here it is. Bob Hope interviewed him.
What, you have a date on that?
1991.
I didn't.
January 14th.
I was already gone. Doesn't say anything about length, does it? Or,
no, it sure doesn't. I would like to get a hold of this. I've got a list of interviews mentioned in Ian Peirce's report on the Parkway that lists several interviews that I haven't been able to find. The Trotino one, there's another one on Ed Abuel that I've never seen. And another.
Now, there's one, I think, one in the files on Ed Abuel. You've seen that one?
Yeah, so yeah. One done by Herb Evison,
right?
He did that in 71 or
way
72.
Way back, yeah.
Right. And there's also one done on Stanley Abbott in 1958 by Herbert.
Herb Evison did that, right?
Yeah. And those are some that I would really like to get my hands on that I haven't been able to find yet.
I'm surprised because they were in the files.
Mm-hmm. Right. Some, maybe people bring them home and
now,
don't bring
you,
them back.
Did you go to the archives?
I haven't checked the archives yet.
I'll
that's the next
there.
Place.
I'll bet you there.
Because
they were there in headquarters. Fairly well done.
Right. Well, you've done a lot of the research. And the next thing I would like to look for is the reconnaissance reports of not Van Gelder. I know they're available, but Abuel's. And I'm wondering where I might be able to find those.
Two places. One, Virginia State Archives in the Highway Right of Way Department territory.
Okay.
Which is most likely. Most
mm-hmm.
likely.
Okay.
They're loaded. Or used to be, what's in, where somebody's reading them out, but that's where I would recommend you look. And then, of course, the reports to the parks in Washington
right.
would be
yeah,
in
that
there.
That makes sense
but,
here, too.
But again, they may have been weeded,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah.
that's where they're, but my first encouragement, look in the State Highway Lighted Department
okay.
in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay, yep. I may do that, and maybe, would there be similar ones in Raleigh?
They were working most on that side, see.
Okay.
That side.
Okay.
What they're doing, they were looking up and saying, this is what we want you to buy, Virginia. What we want you to buy North Carolina. And Virginia was doing something. That's where I think Van Gelder was, yeah.
Okay, yeah, he was in Virginia.
Right, yeah.
And Abuel was North Carolina. Also, so the maps. Remember that exhibit that was at the Linear Parks Conference in Charlottesville? I believe it went to Washington. I'm just wondering, like, where the original plums might be, and also those elevation maps, different things
okay.
like that. I'm wondering.
Plums are in park headquarters, or probably in the archives now. They
okay.
were hanging in there.
And that's the original ones.
Oh, yes.
Gosh, that's the other thing I want to see.
But again, the detail, the amount of work that's in there, which is absolutely fascinating and remarkable. But all those were hanging there. In the engineering department.
Okay.
Now, they've moved and moved again.
Right.
They've changed consensus about what is to be kept and what's not to be kept. So, odds are against you, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well,
let's
see.
That's the place to look.
Okay.
And Roy, what's his name? Roy there in the engineering? Roy?
Can't think of his last name.
But Roy would be the person to know.
Okay, well, I'll ask him next time I'm down in the area.
You know what happened to him, yeah. Bob Hope would have been years ago, but Bob's gone, and with him much went all sorts of not. Are you planning to interview him?
I don't have him on the list, but I could. Easily.
He's the best of the best.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind,
too. If you're
looking
for information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I met him at the conference, but I haven't got his address. He wasn't on the main list.
He's in Roanoke. the park headquarters can give you his number.
Okay.
And he's living in Roanoke and easily available there indeed. But his knowledge is unreal. And he needs to be interviewed before he goes much further in age. So I would encourage you.
I don't know why I haven't thought about doing that, but I sure will. Okay.
Because he will know who else to see and so forth. He also will know many of those landscape architects, because a number of those are still around.
Mm-hmm.
And what's amazing is how many of them there were.
Right.
And many of those came directly from the Westchester.
Mm-hmm.
Right, directly down here. I think Abbott brought them.
Abbott worked with them at first, but he didn't come down.
But I think Abbott is the one who brought them. Mm-hmm. I think what he did, just basically reached out and said, come on down, Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
So I think happened. So we're talking from 1 to 25 or better.
Wow. Yeah, but Ted Pease is definitely an interesting one. I'm glad that he's so close to me.
Ted's
right.
The sound. See, now, Ted didn't come out of that group. Ted mm-hmm. came out of Smokey's two or two ups over here.
Mm-hmm.
But the group who came out of Westchester, somebody needs to do a detailed story on the Westchester legacy to Parkway. Yeah.
And even the comparisons between what they did.
Because it
was the same thing. Same thing.
Work, slum clearance, urban renewal, same sort of theme. And much of what we have in the way of structures, right out of the brains of those same people. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody needs to, see, there's a PhD dissertation, a great one right there.
That's right.
So do that if you're a PhD.
Can you think of anything else?
Is Leo Collins on your list?
No, he's not.
Okay. Add Leo Collins. Leo is out of the Bluffs District up there. Leo grew up during that period of the aftermath of the Depression and then became a workman and a foreman and so forth on the Parkway. And he's filled with all sorts of stories. So you.
Okay, I've run into his name, but I haven't thought of contacting him.
Again, the park headquarters, the alumni, he'll be on the alumni list there. Now, you need also to be talking to some of our rangers, some of the old-time rangers, like Dean Richardson, for example.
And where would Dean Richardson
be? Dean is up in Allegheny County, or Sparta.
Okay.
Long-time district ranger there in the Bluffs. And his colleagues who worked with him, they've got stories, galore stories, mm-hmm. bootleg chases and all these items. And the changes they've seen. They're the ones who've seen the change.
And that's the kind of stuff I'm interested in, too, the contact between the local people.
Right.
Was he the first district ranger?
I don't think so.
I've seen his name, too.
No.
Okay.
But Dean is the sort of person you really need to interview while he's still got all the marbles up there, and he's got them.
Right. Okay.
You need some of those. He can also alert you to some of the laborers who work there at Bluffs, there at the headquarters, you see, right out of his office. Because those are fellows who did the actual maintenance and all that, which is a different dimension. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of who else and what else. Oh, well.
Earl Trevathan.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some of your. Go back and look at some of the lists of your early naturalists.
Oh, like Bill Lord.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bill Lord is in Roanoke, for sure.
Okay, someone gave me his address, and I've been planning to give him a call, but he's somebody that
Bill
would be good.
Bill is a dynamic, very dynamic mm-hmm. person. You might do Bill Lord and Bob Hope the same day, for example, or do them together as a team.
Mm-hmm.
I've been privileged to ride the Parkway with both of those at the same time. Now, you talk about a treat. Oh, my, a treat was indeed. But, yeah, Bill Lord is certainly one. And I'm thinking, hey, we also need some of those early naturalists.
Mm-hmm.
For example, chief naturalist. I can't think of his last name. Anyhow, go back and look at some of your reports and see who some of the early naturalists were. And they will be well worthy of interviewing us to what was going on out there, what they were planning.
Okay.
You also need the beginning of your Eastern Park. That thing has blossomed beyond belief. So that is a vital story, and you need to go back and see some of those early people on that one.
Tell me a few of your thoughts about the whole concessions and how it's been good or bad.
Well, I appreciate the money they bring in, the support they bring in. But I don't appreciate them crowding out the interpreters.
Right.
So we need either a larger building, and I think larger building would be the answer indeed. But as you well know, for example, at the Vogar Center, it's the eastern person that is highly visible.
Right, same thing with the Cone Estate too.
We could
open that up as a historic site.
And
but
should.
It's all crafts.
And should. Mm-hmm. But see, it has a much better story than crafts to tell. So that's something I think we need to be looking at on the Barkway. Real, honest-to-God interpretation. Book sales, yes, I'm in favor of those, 100%. But let's do them adjunct, not as the dominant one.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
See, what else is in there we need to talk about? Yeah.
Did you see any parts of the Parkway actually being constructed? Or?
Oh, yes.
I guess there's a little bit.
All along. Yeah. See, in those days after the war, you'd travel on a parkway for a while and dump off for a while. Parkway for a while and dump off for a while. So yes. But from day one, those parking overlooks were favorite necking places. So that added and enhanced the type of traffic up there. But when you're looking at people who come for the first time and then come back again, I see in my lifetime, for example, the Japanese have come and we've hosted them for interpretation. From all the world, people have come, the professionals have come to look at us. And just recently, of course, Mr. Everhart receiving the award for the Great American Road. So those are the changes taking place from that one small little effort to put people to work.
Right. And I think it's funny how this whole region has changed. Like, we started out being the bowels of the whole country, and now we're paradise to everyone. And that's bringing in so many new situations,
sure.
Too. How do you deal with encroachment and so many people?
And when that road was conceived, there weren't many of those county seats along it that had paved roads at all.
Right.
And now, with interstates feeding in, with millions and millions coming annually, I wonder what the next 10 years will bring so far as visitation.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest disappointment in the park is has nothing to do with the Parkway itself, except all the trespass, the second home people who are building and building and building, mm-hmm. and taking advantage of the park regime.
Right. I know they want the good neighbor of the Park Service because they want the beauty. That's why they're moving here. But they're taking
the beauty away
by building
the
house there.
Right. That decreases my view and decreases, as far as I'm concerned, their property value as well.
Yeah.
But darn it, it was not designed for that. And we know now, of course, that more land should have been acquired. But nobody at that time ever dreamed.
Mm-hmm. I think we're making a good move now by hiring Laura Rodegard, the community planner, to go in and try to work with the communities to make them realize long term it's better to have
help
a barrier
us,
there
help
and
us,
you
help
know
us.
To make some money.
Yourself.
That's right.
Yes.
And in short term they may get a little bit higher tax base, but long term that's gonna just take everything away from them.
Well, now see, also the planning administration for the Park Service here has changed also. So much of the superintendent's time went to planning construction.
Mm-hmm.
Planning construction.
Right.
Interpretation was a sideline. Now construction's finished. Now what are the dominant things? See, the new superintendent coming in soon. There's some great possibilities out there.
That's right.
Now Gary's done a good job getting it together. We'll soon have the headquarters, I think, well along.
Mm-hmm.
The next person who comes by will certainly have a dream of a job and a horror of a job. Okay, now where does it take us? What does the park will become 25 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
Will I be able to drive it and see a little beauty, or will I see nothing but houses?
That's
we
right.
have one screen and one screen only, not that community planning, but the Forest Service holdings.
Right.
That is our only screen.
Mm-hmm. And that's not all of the park, it's just spots of it here
spots.
And here.
Mm-hmm. But that screen is, I hope, permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be saving grace. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Do you think that Tennessee still looks over to North Carolina and feel that they have really lost out?
I don't think so. I think Tennessee now, with building its Loop Parkway, has a different world. I think Mr. Ickes made the right decision at that mm-hmm. particular time in politics, though I don't envy him. As you know, he went contrary to his own commission.
I know.
He had a lot of guts. But I think his reasoning, particularly about the fact that Tennessee already had those TVA funds coming in, all that, that it would be unfair to dump all that traffic on Knoxville and leave Asheville a bear up there. Right. So I think he
and
was smart.
Prettier section too. I think.
And he's arguing from a viewpoint that, hey, cheaper. He's also arguing from a viewpoint that Forest Service land is an asset.
That's right.
And I think he's right on that. Mm-hmm. But Tennessee made a good argument. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness they didn't win it. You
know? I know.
Now, this is something that Asheville needs to keep in mind. Roanoke realized it for a long time until they lost to Park Headquarters. Park Headquarters is essential to this region for economic being. The Parkway is essential to this area here for economic being. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the average administrator and the average administrative job politically in Western North Carolina knows this. Mm-hmm. We're talking literally billions of dollars that they need to be aware of. They need to be much more avid supporters of the Parkway. Mm-hmm. Much more avid.
Right. What makes the headquarters being in one state so essential?
That's where the jobs are. That's where the jobs are.
That makes sense.
As you know, Roanoke lost it because the concept was that Asheville would be the center for the new Parkway, which would lead from the Shenandoah all the way down to Atlanta.
Georgia, right?
Yes, yes. Never materialized.
Mm-hmm. And now Asheville has it again.
Has and it's that state here. And once the building goes in, it should be at least semi-permanent. But nothing is permanent.
Right.
Nothing is permanent. Because it could easily move back to Roanoke with a different political power.
Mm.
I don't see that happening, but you know darn well. In the world of politics, yes, it could happen.
It depends on who's in power where.
Because Asheville, obviously, is not centrally located for the Parkway.
Mm-hmm.
And something else, I think the superintendent needs a helicopter.
That makes sense. I mean, the farther away from headquarters you are, the less you hear about things.
Right.
And I was only two districts away for 4 years. And
it's a different world.
Yeah, when I moved a little closer, I felt it a little more. I knew what was going on a lot sooner.
Much more vibrations, indeed. Huh. But the distance is so enormous that a car and telephone are not adequate.
Right.
The radio helps, but even so, the physical presence of the superintendent, so we can have all the projects, would be so big. And they aren't that expensive.
Right. I'm surprised that they didn't think of putting it at the new Fisher's Peak that they're supposed to build, because it would be very centrally located. They were right on the line.
It may come back up again. It may come back
that's
up.
Interesting. That's something I haven't thought of. It's really interesting.
There's nothing permanent about that. Mm. You've watched how the Park Service has changed its regional headquarters and all this. Anything can happen. Mm. But for the time being. Mm. Now, you were asking about one of the things that shocked me was, in doing research, how close we came to having tolls on the Parkway.
Mm.
The research I did demonstrated that I've seen, you've probably seen designs for where the toll stations would
they
be.
They actually built, I think, one of the
tolls. They were actually built. Mm-hmm. Actually built, and uniformed persons there ready to take the money.
Mm-hmm.
When the state of North Carolina got to revoke.
I believe Ted Peace talked to me about the actual building.
Actual building, yes. Now, I've seen those were converted into visitor information booths.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that was not the original purpose. Which purpose was
right. Well, it was North Carolina, I guess, that the governor that fought them back, because he had just promised
we won't have
it. Do you think that they'll ever come back? And we're looking for ways to deal with the crowds.
My suspicions are that in your lifetime we may go to a toll with a stipulation that residents of North Carolina will have a free pass.
That'll be interesting. With so many accesses, I'd be curious to see just how they're going to do
it. Well, they had it. I've seen design on the thing, and they had it constructed in that fashion. But you know, it'd been a headache.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's one of the things that's still out there.
Right. The other thing that worries me is the concessions. So many government people are talking about selling the parks to the concessioners, and it's already happened in one of our campgrounds.
You lost campground. Well, some of those things can work, but I don't see privatization of our national parks, period. I think they are ours, they should stay ours, should not become the property of one group, because they were designed originally to set aside for the enjoyment. So, you know,
And which is a private entity, they'll think money.
Different world, absolutely.
That's right.
I was out Yellowstone 2 weeks ago, with great joy. The elk were out in the mating season, and here they were everywhere. And I had read about and heard about the bugling. Here to see the, would I privatize that? No, thank you. No, thank you. Or privatize the smokies? No, no, thank you. Now, I can see more areas in which private industry could help us. I see, for example, letting contracts for private industry to clear some vistas. Yeah, but not the parkway concept, not the idea. Yeah.
Right.
Let these be subcontracts.
Right, I agree with that. And it's always been done that way anyway.
Right, don't let them, don't let them run the show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're in for a treat. You've got some great people to see. But I would put Bob Hope and then his buddy there on very, very high, very high.
Okay, well, I'll do that. I've got Bill Lord's phone number already.
Yeah,
Bill
is
continuing. I know I can find Bob Hope's
easily. Tell him what you're doing. And my suggestion literally is to do both of them together.
Okay, let me do that.
Take them up on the parkway, feed them a good lunch, and then take them up on the parkway and just sit back. Oh, they are all right. They are all right, absolutely. But they are knowledgeable. They are. Oh,
that's what I want.
The man I was trying to think of a while ago, Don Robinson. He's one of the early naturalists. He was a naturalist, chief naturalist in the Civil War. And the other person with him came to our annual meeting up at Pixie Water, Earl Estes. He was a chief naturalist.
Okay.
And Ina Parr will have addresses for all these people.
Okay.
But you might do a telephone interview with Don Robinson. I think he's out in Washington or someplace like that.
Okay.
But. He is a dynamic person. And that's a dimension we're missing. What it was like in those early days of planning, when he only had just a little territory that was open and accessible, then to plan all the signs, to plan all the things you're going to interpret, what do you leave out, what do you include, all these things. He could, that'd be a dimension in that territory.
That would be interesting. Well, good. In the tape.